Blog Talk Radio.
Why are police photographing our license plates?
What are we doing for veterans returning home damaged physically and mentally, suffering from depression, homelessness, and suicide?
Why did the Supreme Court deposit corporate money into our electoral process?
Should we redefine middle class as working poor? Or is it just another Wall Street merger?
What's really behind new voter picture ID laws in certain states?
Why aren't NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox asking these questions?
To the Reasonable Voices Blog Talk Radio, where politics is honest and art is poignantly political. Today we're talking to Virginia advocates of the ratification of the Equal Rights Amendment. And first let's welcome Andrea Miller, who is the co-chair of the Virginia PDA, that's Progressive Democrats of America. Andrea, how are you today?
I am fine. Thank you, Marcello, for having me on. I'm also national as well, so I'm kind of a rather unusual position.
That's right. National PDA and ERA. You're everywhere. And they're all good causes. Yes. Tell me, you know, I always have to start off with my sort of repetitive confession, because like most people, when I first found out there were ladies like you speaking up and advocating for the Equal Rights Amendment ratification, my first thing was, I thought it had been ratified. But in honesty, it hasn't been. So tell us a bit about, first of all, that process. For those who don't know, Congress passed the bill, and then the states, and you take it from there, if you don't mind.
All right. Well, not only did Congress pass the bill and the president signed it, when you're working with a constitutional amendment, it then goes out to the states for ratification. Now, they need 38 states to say, yes, we are willing to accept this as a new amendment to the Constitution. Now, the ERA, when the bill was passed by Congress, had what they call a ratification deadline, and that deadline was set for 1972. Well, when they realized, when they had 35 states, that 1972 was rapidly approaching, they requested an extension, and it was extended until 1982. But remember, in those days, this is before the Internet, before easy access to the media and our neighbors, we still only had 35 states. So the deadline expired with three more states to go. So the ERA was passed by Congress, that's correct. It was signed by the president, that's also correct. However, it was never ratified by the states. So that means we have unfinished business with the Equal Rights Amendment.
Yes, and part of that unfinished business is there are two bills, one before the Senate, and I'm sure you have the numbers. I don't have them at the tip of my tongue, but one before the House that concerns extending or rather eliminating the deadline for the ratification. Where are we with Congress on that? I know you spend a lot of time trying to educate Congress, because there are many people in Congress who are like I was, who didn't realize this wasn't a done deal, or at least they say they don't.
And that's really, really, really very true. There are a lot of people in Congress who don't realize that this really was never a done deal. Now, the bill in the Senate is SJ Res 15, and if people are going to go look up the bill, it's very, very important that you get in the J. S is for Senate, J is for joint, and then Res is resolution. number 15. That bill is sponsored by Senator Ben Cardin of Maryland and also by Senator Mark Kirk of Illinois. Now, what's really important about the sponsorship in Senate is Ben Cardin is a Democrat and Mark Kirk is a Republican from Illinois, which also happens to be an unratified state. So basically, when that bill was introduced in the Senate, we had Democrats and Republicans on that bill recognizing that women have unfinished business with the Constitution of the United States. And when the bill was introduced, on May 9th, it came out with 20 co-sponsors. So that was very, very, very exciting. And as you said, Marcello, this bill is designed to completely eliminate the ratification deadline. Now, originally, when constitutional amendments were proposed, there was never a ratification deadline as part of the amendment. You can also say it was sort of habit that Congress started putting these things in probably after the 1930s, because normally before that we never saw ratification deadlines on anything. And the other thing to be aware of is the deadline is not written in the amendment itself. The deadline is basically written in the preamble, which is on a constitutional amendment almost like the cover page. So we know that since Congress had the authority to extend the deadline, which they have already done, we also know that means they have the authority to completely remove it. So we are asking them eliminate the deadline, and as soon as we get three states that ratify, and there are 15 unratified, then we will have our newest constitutional amendment. Wanting to get too wonky, but our last constitutional amendment, 27th Amendment, called the Madison Amendment, that amendment actually resurrected 203 years later, and it was into law. So technically, and this goes back to James Madison developed this amendment, we never really anticipated or expected in the beginning with constitutional amendments that we were going to stick deadlines on them.
Well, that's you said it all on that. I want to mention one thing before I forget. You mentioned also that Illinois has not ratified. But also the Commonwealth of Virginia has not ratified.
The Commonwealth of Virginia is unratified. And when look at the southern states, there are really only two ratified southern states. It's easier for me to tell you who isn't ratified than to go through the big long list of who is. So Kentucky and Tennessee are the only southern states that are ratified.
I think it's a good for us to point out, because we reach out as political activists, we reach out to everyone, and there are many, many issues that I know Americans think divide us, but there are also many more that don't, and certainly the rights of every American is equal. I mean, it's what we preach. It's what's in the Constitution, except, of course, which makes the point. I always get funny looks and stares when I mention in the news particularly that women are not equal constitutionally. And I'm sure that people are going to listen to this show and go, what are Andrea and Marcello talking about? Women have always been equal. Well, we know about the vote. Everybody knows about that. But why are women not specifically, and of course I bring up the fact that, well, as recently as just a few months ago, Justice Scalia said there is no constitutional guarantee of this equality based on sex. And there is an amendment, tell me which, because I know you know this, it specifically says male, so there's no question that it's about, that women are involved. You fill in the gaps there for me if you don't mind.
Well, the 14th Amendment, and that's the one where people always want to say, oh, well, women are included in the 14th Amendment. When you go and you read the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, it's very important to understand that when they said men, they didn't mean people. They meant men. And again, in the time in which the Constitution was drafted, they were talking about wealthy, land-owning white men. So women weren't in it, minorities weren't in it, and white people who didn't own land weren't in it. So the Constitution, as the country has grown up, we had to reach back and include more people in the Constitution and say, you have these rights as well. Women were given the right to vote, but we have never been made equal under the law as it regards discrimination on the basis of sex. Our Constitution, strangely enough, does not say that. Now, this is from Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Every Constitution drafted since World War II contains a clause which specifically says men and women are of equal stature under the law. The United States Constitution does not. And remember, we were instrumental in drafting every Constitution since World War II.
That's true. That's true. I want to tell a quick story, and then we may go to commercial break because we have a call, and I need to check who that is. And so I'll put you on hold. But in the meantime, before all of that, I want to tell a quick story for those who still may have some doubts. In my lifetime, and I'm just a kid, but in my lifetime, I remember a friend, a theater friend, who was going through a divorce, a woman, and she was very upset on the phone once, and then she worked in the box office where I was the director, and I asked her when she got off the phone what was wrong. Well, what was wrong was she suddenly had no credit whatsoever, because even though all of the credit cards that she was carrying in her purse had both her husband and her name on the cards, once she was divorced, all that credit rating and those credit cards all went to him. She no longer had credit. I had to get on the phone and call several credit card companies and argue on her behalf for days before they would issue a new card. Now, I know we have a new law since then about that, but I just wanted to point out for those who are still out there going, what's all the talk about, that we really do have a number of second-class citizens, let's face it. But today we're talking about women. And we need to really question authority and look at the details, because the truth is in the details. Have you had any particular experiences like what I described, like a woman trying, for instance, to buy a house alone or maintain credit after divorce? You remember those days?
Oh, I definitely do remember all those days. I remember an aunt being widowed and literally having to go to her brother to have her brother handle a lot of the banking, because she wasn't able very easily to get things transferred into just her name.
Wow. All right. I hope everybody's listening to this, because those are still the kinds of things we are dealing with, and women in particular are simply asking that the Constitution, as it does for so many other members of society in the 14th Amendment, simply apply to them. When we come back, we're going to maybe have another another guest today. But let me find out who's on this call. In the meantime, let us just take a little break and listen to The Spoken Word by Bernard Hankins called Glass. We'll be right back.
Glass. Glass slippers and glass ceilings. Glass slippers. Men to women kneeling. Glass ceilings. Women to men kneeling. It's crystal glass clear. She's still in the same position she was last year. From the break room, hears laughs and jeers about breastfeeding, menstrual bleeding, and pap smears. Once upon a time, she looked up at the mirror, mirror on the wall. Now she looks up at the glass, mirrors on the wall. Street, tall feet, but the climb to the top of the castle is no small feat. Since men chase money, she gave up on a fairy god and being carried by a male. They didn't pursue her, so she married a job, pursued a career in sales as a new fairy tale. A story where she lives in a 13-bedroom mansion that she bought and owns all her own, because it's better to be the chairwoman alone than just a princess who's seated on a throne.
Welcome back to The Reasonable Voices. Our guest is Andrea Miller, and we're having a little technical difficulties getting our second guest on the line, but in the meantime, let's continue with Andrea. Andrea, are you there? Are you still on hold?
Oh, I am here. Hopefully, one of the things that I want to talk about quickly is pay inequity. It is still for so many women, and this is women in what I call really good states where the pay equity is probably the best. Women still earn 77 cents to a man's dollar. Now, if you go and look at minority women, that figure drops down about 10 cents, and so we're looking at 65 to 67 cents to what a man earns. And if women sue and make it all the way to the Supreme Court, as they did in the case of Duke versus Walmart, they simply risk the result being there is nothing in the Constitution that prohibits discrimination on the basis of sex.
And we know we get that right from the top judicial source. That brings us, my mind, of course, to the Ledbetter Act. Most people think that took care of that, but really it doesn't, because until you know about it, and you don't, may not know about it, as Ms. Ledbetter, who is the bill is named after, you may not even know you're being discriminated against financially and for months or years, and then when you try to rectify that, you have this to go through. Make certain we understand what the Ledbetter Act does and what it doesn't do and what remains to be done, if you could do that for us, Andrea.
The important thing to understand about the Lilly Ledbetter Act is it does not prevent the discrimination. It neither prevents it nor is it outlawed. All it simply does is give you a longer time to file suit after you discover you've been discriminated against. Discrimination is still technically legal. You just have a longer time to find out about it and then pursue. Right.
I know I'm laughing, but it's one of those things that politicians do, and of course politicians are not the only ones guilty in this inequity, but come out and say something as though the problem is solved, when really nothing's been done, nothing's been done anyway. Okay.
Well, if Lilly Ledbetter resolved everything, why did we need the Paycheck Fairness Act? We're still putting Band-Aids and never addressing the real problem.
All right. I'm going to welcome to join us now, our second guest today is Candace Graham. Candace, which do you prefer, Candace or Candy? And hello.
Please call me Candy.
Okay.
Hi, can you hear me?
Okay. Yes, I can. And Andrea, can you hear both of us?
I hear everybody. Hi,
okay.
Candy.
Hi, Andrea. Unfortunately, I missed some of what you said, so hopefully I won't repeat anything. I'm really pursuing the SJ Res 15 at the Virginia level. And yesterday I went with a couple of friends to Mark Warner's office in Richmond, and we are trying desperately to get him to co-sponsor SJR 15 and have not even gotten a response from him. So now I'm hoping that we can get more women across the state to visit his other offices. I have some friends who are in the Norfolk area and the Roanoke area, so the two that we're really looking for some support are around the Abington office and also Vienna. So if there's anyone who can help us with that, the more he hears from us, the more it's going to move up on his list of things to do.
Now, to find these offices, do you have an address, or we visit your website maybe to know exactly where they're located?
Yes, and it's very easy. You know, if anybody Googles offices, Senator Mark Warner, Virginia, there will be contact information that comes up, and it has the phone numbers and the addresses for all of his state offices.
Excellent. And again, you're asking women and men. This is, you know, when people ask me, why are you so pretty? I said, because this isn't just about women. This is about everything and person and relationship and household and job and business where a woman is involved. Because
you
if you're married
so right.
to a woman or associated with a woman in any way, you have a financial bridge in addition to whatever other relationship you may have, what that woman is making and how she's being treated affects you. You know, so men listen to this too, women, and let's go visit these offices. But I want either you or Andrea Candy to jump in and tell us, first of all, this isn't a partisan issue, but it upsets me to hear that there's a Democratic senator who is slow to recognize the value of this, and I like Senator Warner and have respect for him, but he's got to get on board. But we also have another Virginia senator newer to that position, Senator Tim Kaine. What is his position, as if I didn't know, on ERA?
He has co-sponsored, and that was just last Wednesday, I believe, that all we had to do was ask. All we did was ask, and he signed on as a co-sponsor. So that was great.
And I think that's something that's the motivation as well as the proof. But that's the motivation to all our listeners that, as Andrea and I were saying before you came on the line, Candy, just because somebody's in Congress doesn't mean they know all the facts or know everything. Andrea and I have actually sat in the office of a congressman who is no longer a congressman, but when the facts about a bill that was before Congress was explained to him, he did not know that those were the details and immediately called in his staff and said, I want to be on this and you know, in a positive way. So sometimes it is about asking, and of course if asking isn't enough, then like Candy is suggesting, we go to all their offices and we show support. You don't have to go screaming and yelling, waving signs necessarily. One of the most powerful demonstrations I feel I've ever seen was the silence of women ringing the State House in Richmond to make their point. Let's talk a little about, you know, there have been a number of things like Saturday, April 27th of this year. We all met for a rally in Richmond, very, very near, indeed in the shadow of the State House. But let's talk about that and the connection between that and women circling the State House a year ago. But also, let's mention there was a time when ladies were protesting the General Assembly in Virginia, and 31 were arrested in a not so, shall we say, sensitive manner. Andrea or Candy, just jump right in. Give us a little history of what you ladies have been up to and what you've had to go through.
Well, it was initially a demonstration that our reproductive rights were not being respected. The state government had passed bills that required an ultrasound, required a waiting period, which is really difficult for women who are coming from out of town, who don't have the funds or the transportation. And it was, you know, the purpose was to demean a woman who was seeking an abortion. And, you know, as has been stated, that can happen for so many reasons. But the point is, this is the woman's decision to make. This is our choice to make, and it is a right. And we have included that, expanded on it, and included other rights that matter to women, and that's what the rally was about this year, that we need to stand up and use our power, because we were not able to get those horrendous laws repealed, even though there was legislation introduced, but with the current makeup of the government in Virginia, women's rights will continue to be ignored, disrespected, trampled on, and that has got to change.
Mm-hmm. And it starts with, of course, contacting our senators and the House of Representatives, too. Can we speak to the resolution before the House? And is it, for an end of the deadline for Equal Rights Amendment ratification? Does it differ in any way from what's before the Senate, and how is it bearing?
This is Andrea. H.J. Res 43 is an identical piece of legislation. It's a true companion bill, as it were. We have added 9 new co-sponsors to that bill since May 9th, and we've added 3 new co-sponsors on the Senate side. So basically speaking, the bill is moving very, very, very nicely.
Well, good. It doesn't, you know, when you think of all the number, the total number of members of Congress, that doesn't seem like wow, but I guess considering what women have had to go through since the founding of the country, that finally people are standing up and saying, maybe we should explain that. What does it mean to co-sponsor a bill in Congress?
Well,
what is that?
Okay, all right. On the House side, there are 435 representatives. In order to pass a piece of legislation in the normal route, you're going to need at least 218 positive votes. On the Senate side, there are 100 senators. Now, in reality, normally to pass a bill in the Senate, if we had a cooperative Congress, you would really only need a simple majority. You would only need 51 votes. But because we still never really did away with the filibuster, we basically have to figure we need 60 votes. So when a bill is introduced, normally the patrons of the bill or individuals or organizations that support that bill work to get other members of Congress to agree that they support that bill. And that agreement is basically called co-sponsoring, where they allow their names to be placed as being in support of this legislation. Now, when it comes up for a vote, that doesn't exactly guarantee that they're going to vote for it. But it does at least mean that they are in support of bringing this piece of legislation to the floor. But ultimately, we have to successfully move it through the Judiciary Committee and then from the Judiciary Committee onto the full floor for a major for full vote in both the House and the Senate.
Excellent. And
the same is true in Virginia. The same is true in Virginia.
Uh-huh. As in the General Assembly, you mean?
Right, in the General Assembly. It's just called Privileges and Elections rather than Judiciary, but it's the same idea. The numbers are a little different, but it's the same idea.
I see. I want to now I just want to remind us again, even though I know we've said this just a short time ago, Candy, this is what you were trying to get Senator Mark Warner to sign on to as a co-sponsor of this resolution, yes?
Yes, and as Andrea pointed out, we also need Congressman Bobby Scott to sign on as a co-sponsor for H.J. Res. 43, the companion bill, primarily because he is a member of the Judiciary Committee.
Well, that would come in handy. What sort of – are you getting any excuses or are you getting any answers at all from these two regarding this resolution?
Well, just from the staff for Senator Warner, it was explained that, you know, there have been so many bills and they're very busy and they have to be selective about which bills they co-sponsor. And that's not
well
we're not responding favorably to that.
No, that won't do. That won't do at all. I'm sorry, what were you saying, Danny? Floored me. I mean, again, I stress, this isn't a partisan issue, but it is particularly disappointing to me when a Democrat gives you a response like that. I don't know what to say about that. So that's why we're going to visit his various offices throughout the state of Virginia. What about in D.C. itself? I have friends who believe in the just drop in and walk in policy. Has that worked for you?
Oh, yes.
In Congress.
Andrea can speak better to that.
As you know, I am the drop-in queen, and I have had many people sign on to many bills simply because I just stopped by to let them know that the bill was out there. Now, the part that Senator Warner said about there being so many bills, yes, that's correct. I'm having a problem with we have a quota as to how many bills we can get on. There is no quota. I mean, if a member of Congress wanted to sign on to every bill that was ever introduced, there is no law or nothing that says they can't do that. It realistically wouldn't make sense, but there is nothing to prevent them from doing that. Can I tell a really quick little story? I got a phone call from one of the people that you and I, we visited his office. It was actually the congressman himself. He wanted to invite me to a fundraising breakfast. And I thought, well, let me take this opportunity to ask him to co-sponsor H.J. Res. 43. He was unaware of the bill, so I explained it to him. He said, I'm going to need to talk to my staff to make sure that there's not some major objection that I'm just not seeing. And he said, I'll call you back in minutes. He called back, and he said, I'm on the bill.
Fantastic.
It was a two-minute ad hoc conversation.
Yes, and that brings us to what I have actually heard from members of Congress myself and certainly learned from accompanying Andrea Miller around the halls of Congress, and that is You can email all you want and click on as many online petitions as you want, and I'm not against that, but I've had members of Congress say to me that it doesn't matter as much to them, and one couple were a little more forceful about that, and it was the No Labels conference that I attended, and there must have been, 10 members of Congress there, and I won't name any of them because I don't want to embarrass anyone at this point, but their point was that you can click on this and you can email and that's fine. You can even make a call and that's fine. But until someone or group of people or organization stands in their office, that's when they start counting the votes that they can either gain or lose. And I was told by more than one member of Congress that every person who comes to their office, not necessarily even seeing them face-to-face, but comes to their office and presents their position and their maybe some paperwork. Andrea's very good and very formal, and it's all structured for her, but you don't have to be as good as Andrea to do this. But every person who shows up counts as 1,000 votes in that congressman's opinion. One person. Equaling 1,000 votes simply because they go, and it isn't just Congress, it's their regional offices. You show up, you don't have to break things and call names and scream and yell. You show up, act professionally and respectfully, but you present your case. And I've seen that happen, and I think we've just, everybody just needs to know that. And so let's revisit again, if we could, throw out for us, Candy, where just the cities or where they can find these offices and Senator Mark Warner and when it is we want them to do that so we can all join in.
Yes, just as soon as possible. And the cities where he has regional offices in the state are Abingdon, Norfolk, Richmond, Vienna, and Roanoke. And those can be found just by Googling his office information in Virginia.
Okay. And we can also, by Googling his office, we can also get telephone numbers so we can visit and call and do all the – exactly. All right.
Yes.
This is – and by the way, all you blog writers out there listening, write about this and post on Facebook and Twitter. We believe it or not, I know it sometimes seems like we're helpless, but we're not. It really was set up to work, despite what George Will says. But this whole system was set up to work, but it doesn't work until the people go directly to those for whom they vote. Because as I always say, if there's one thing a politician likes more than the money that he gets from whatever source, it's the being reelected. There's nothing more motivating to a member of Congress than the possibility of being reelected. And that's where you're showing up at their office and expressing your concerns and your POV. That's what tells them how to get reelected. I hate to put it that way, but there it is. Okay, I'm talking too much. We have guests. I'm hoping we'll hear also from Eileen Davis, who is the coordinator, I believe, of ERA Virginia. She's on the road. I know she's going to try and call in. Let's continue. Is there anything, Candy or Andrea, that you think we haven't touched on that we should mention, that we haven't maybe mentioned already?
Has Andrea mentioned the piece that we brought to the offices that's titled Unfinished Business?
No, I didn't. I keep referring to it, but I haven't really mentioned it.
Is that
okay,
something that we can make available if we hear from people who are wanting to contact these regional offices for the senator? Can we make that available to them?
Yes.
Unfinished business is available if you go to www.pdacommunity.org. It is actually on the ERA Three State page. So if you go there, you will see that. And that was written by a young man, Sean Roy, that it's written very specifically for Virginia. So he's fellow Virginian, and he has written this article, and it's absolutely wonderful. I thought of one aspect that we haven't totally touched on, and that is that the ERA works perfectly for women and for men and for LGBT. It works for everybody because one of the things we always have to be careful of when we create sweeping legislation is that we don't have unintended results and create reverse discrimination. So the ERA, because it's so simplistic, it prohibits discrimination on the basis of sex. Since it doesn't call out any individual sex, it simply says you cannot discriminate against women. You can't now swing around and discriminate against men because previously you discriminated against women. It says you're not discriminating against anybody based on whatever they say their sex is. So if we invent a new one, you don't get to discriminate on the basis of that either.
All right, I'm going to, on that note, I do think that Eileen Davis is calling in, trying to get through to us. I'm going to put you two ladies on hold, but don't go away. We'll have a little short commercial, and then during the commercial, we'll get connected with this call-in that I think is Eileen Davis.
Great.
We'll be right back. Everyone, stay with us.
This job trades her trousers and suit pants for a blouse. She's the new man of the house, wears the uniform to conform, but she still wants to stand out. Knows she looks professional, but does she look beautiful? Can't let her hair fall down or wear ball gowns in the chair of a cubicle. In a power suit, making a PowerPoint, clock strikes 9. Then midnight, way past her children's bedtime. Corner office with the window view. The glass isn't so glamorous. The glass ceiling and not the glass slipper is what she's enamored with. She climbs the corporate ladder and hopes to shatter when she hammers it. Does she have to give up the courtroom for courtship date, trait feeling important and safe in order to incorporate, exchange security for the security exchange for the sake of getting a good rate from pores? Must she act in poor taste, or divorce rates, abortion rates, high mortgage rates, the normal state if a woman wants to own a 500 fortune bank? Is she more of a woman because she works 80? Is she less of a woman because she washes clothes and nurses babies? She's having a child, but can she have it all? Can women have their dessert and cake eat? Does she have to sacrifice being nice? Do women have to resent the sentiment ladies first in order to be first ladies?
Hello? Hello?
Hello, Eileen.
Hey, hi, Marcel.
Hey, how are you? You're with us? You're joining us? This is Eileen Davis. Yes. Welcome to the show. Yes, and we are on also with Andrea Miller and Candy Graham. Everybody say hello.
Hi, Eileen.
Hi.
And Eileen, give me your exact title. Is it Coordinator of ERA Virginia?
Yes, it is. ERA Now Virginia.
And
I'm also the co-founder of Women Matter, Use Your Power.
That was what I was going to ask you to say. Women Matter, Use Your Power.
UseYourPower.com.
You got it. Say it one more time for me. Give us the website one more time.
Women Matter, UseYourPower.com. And Women Matter is a group that was formed to specifically work on ratification of the Equal Rights Amendment in the state of Virginia. And our name is our mission statement. We want women to understand that they matter and that they should use their power. We're going to start right here in the state of Virginia. We're based in Central Virginia in the Richmond area, and we intend to do a lot of lobbying both at the Richmond Capitol and in D.C.
Excellent. And you, of course, have been at this for a while. This is not a new thing for any of the three of you. who are with us today. We have three great guests, if you're just tuning in, who are advocates and activists for the ratification of the Equal Rights Amendment, but in general for the equality of all Americans. That's, I mean, that says it. It's not a it's not just a women's issue, as Andrea was pointing out just before you joined us, Eileen. The amendment that is being proposed, the ERA that's been passed by Congress, waiting to be ratified by Virginia, among others, it does not say that it's equality just for women. It's equality for all the sexes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very short... Say again, sorry?
A person is a person. So it's equality
exactly.
for everyone. It's equality for men. It's equality. The gender doesn't matter. Whether you have a prostate or a uterus should not matter to law.
Exactly. Exactly.
So your gender is should not have application. Two persons are two persons. One person is one person. The gender should not matter under the law. And that's what the ERA says. It's 23 words. We were listening to people say that they turned down the Fair Pay Check Act because it was, too many pages and thousands of words and difficult to understand. You know, the ERA is 26 words, and it eliminates the need for that cumbersome bill. Its genius is in simplicity, and we need to get it done because it would shore up all of the other plethora of laws that we have that are frankly standing on quicksand because they don't have the constitutional protection to gird them up.
I'm not being flippant. I'm going to be flippant. What's the holdup?
That's the $64 billion question. I don't know. I really cannot understand why the pushback and why the holdup and why 90 years later we're still talking about this. I really don't get that. I wish someone would tell me what the holdup is, what the resistance is. You can't find anyone that will tell you that they're against it. Only the biggest problem we seem to have is that to advocate is to educate. It's a bipartisan issue. 97% of women and 96% of men believe that the Equal Rights Amendment should be passed. 72% think that it already has. So a large part of this is an education issue, and it needs to be stressed that it's clearly a very bipartisan issue because it's 97% of the group. There's a lot of Republicans and a lot of Dems. It's a lot of independents.
Exactly.
It's a lot of libertarians. So it's truly a very bipartisan bill. So I can't answer that question. I think I'd have to say it's just the lack of fact that it's not already done. People think that it is, they're wrong.
And somehow it hasn't – I think you're right. I'm going to add something to that, but I think what you said is more the nail on the head than what I'm about to say, but I'll say it anyway. It's not a priority for some reason. It doesn't
– Yeah.
What, so
right.
how do
it's
we –
It's not a priority because
how
they
do
don't
we
understand
make, how do we
–
Yeah, and you know, maybe, let's talk about that. Why is it important? I mean, things are going along, I guess, pretty well if you're a white male. Why is it important?
Because it's the unfinished business. First of all, both on a real practical level and both on a symbolic level, it's important. It's important because it was never done. It's important, even if it weren't symbolic, it would be important. But it's important for very real reasons. It's important because when you have to try and push through a Paycheck Fairness Act, pages and pages and pages, to try and fill a hole that the 23 words of the 26 words of the Equal Rights Amendment would fix, it's important. It's important because we have an international women's treaty in 2013 that we, as the United States of America, have not signed because we can't sign it because the women's treaty would call for us to have an equal rights amendment, which we don't have. And we stand embarrassingly with Sudan, Somalia, and Iran, and Tonga and Palau. 187 countries have signed it. We have not signed it. That is a shame for us. And people don't know that. And when they find out, they get upset. So it's relevant. A lot of people think it's not relevant today. Oh, well, we don't need it anymore. Yeah, we do. And the women's treaty is just another reason why it's more relevant today than ever.
Eileen, will you also talk about the justices, Scalia and Ginsburg, and what they have to say?
Oh, yeah, yeah. You need to remember now, right now, whether or not we feel that women are inferred in the Constitution, whether or not they're inferred in the Constitution, is a matter of debate. And as long as we're debating whether or not women are actually somehow kind of sort of included by inference, it's open to debate. It's open to inference. And Justice Scalia,
yes.
Justice Souter, and Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg have all weighed in. In fact, Scalia used the lack of an Equal Rights Amendment as his excuse for not supporting the Lilly Ledbetter Act, because he told the UCLA law school class in a lecture that he did not support it because the Constitution does not protect against discrimination based on gender. So there was no constitutional precedent for him to vote for the Lilly Ledbetter Act. On the other hand, Souter has also said that it is inferred, but not, you know, it's questionable, yet you could think it does and you could think it doesn't. And Ruth Bader Ginsburg said that it does not. She said every constitution written since World War II, Japan, Germany, Afghanistan, Iraq, they all have equal protection clauses based on gender, which is essentially the Equal Rights Amendment, in their constitutions. We made them put them in, and we don't have one. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a diplomatic embarrassment when you really peel it back.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Oh, I just said it's a high hypocrisy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes us look silly.
Well, here's the thing. I would like, I hope all the listeners got it, bears repeating. There's an international agreement out there somewhere where a lot of countries internationally agree that women are equal, but the United States of America has not signed it. I believe that's what I heard said. Secondly, yes, and secondly, we have, as a country, as a nation, have imposed constitutions on other countries that give women, their women, equal rights, but we don't have it. And then third, the highest court in the land, who we look to as the authority of what's in the Constitution, at least three justices, Supreme Court justices, have expressed some degree of ambiguity about women being constitutionally legal under the law in America. Have I got all three of those?
You have that. Absolutely.
Well, I hope everybody out there listening.
That's the rub. Anybody out there, whether they're Republican or Democrat or independent or they've never voted in their lives, should be really annoyed that the Constitution as it stands today is up for debate and is ambiguous as to whether or not women are as protected as men are. And as long as a Supreme Court justice can use the lack of the discrimination based on gender as a reason to say, well, I'm voting against the bill because the Constitution doesn't say I have to worry about discrimination based on gender. That would be like saying the Constitution doesn't say I can't discriminate based on minority status. The Constitution, if we don't have unambiguous coverage, we need to get it.
Well,
so that's the issue there. You know, it's up for grabs. And I think that the majority of, you know, right now women are the majority of the United States. We don't need to be up for grabs. There's all kinds of other ramifications. There's women in the military. You know, there's a lot of papers have been written about how girding up the Equal Rights Amendment with protection to the women who are in our military service who are not getting equally treated when they go and file sexual harassment and sexual assault charges. There's all kinds of protection that these women are not getting because the laws are ambiguous in terms of their protected status.
You're absolutely right, Eileen, and all three of you. This has been a great show. I'm not quite ready to end it yet, but we're getting close, and I just want to address this piece of it. We all know this to be true. This is a state of mind in some cases. This is a state of mind or a mindset that prevents this, because there's no logical rationale to preventing this amendment. So everybody needs to look in the mirror here and admit, at least in the loneliness of the restroom, in that mirror, that what contribution they are making to which side. Am I contributing to this antiquated opinion of women and where they fit in our society, or do I see the necessity to be a part of what should have been corrected at least decades ago.
Absolutely. We are not, we are talking the talk, but we are not walking the walk. And we as a country have to do that.
And I guess to walk the walk, we need to show up at Senator Mark Warner's offices. We need to show up with or without Andrea Miller in the halls of Congress and walk in. And I want to stress that, you know, Andrea's not joking, and I know I've seen her do it. I've done it with her. You know, you're respectful. A quick little knock, and you open the door, and you walk in, and you have to know who you're there to see and know what it is you want to talk about. You know, as a matter of fact, I've been, not to self-promote, but I've written about some of my experiences on the Hill with Andrea at the Reasonable Voice at the reasonablevoice.com. If you think this is so intimidating that you can't do it, go read that, and you'll find that there is a simple step-by-step way. We have to speak to the senators and the representatives. We have to speak in our towns where we live, at their local offices, regional offices. We've got to go take the time.
Every senator and every congressman is easily accessed by email. When you think about what the women went through and getting the women the right to vote, which is our only constitutional protection, is the right. They did it, and they did it by being visible. They did it by, you know, without email, without telephone. We have that at our fingertips, literally. Everyone needs to get on and email a letter and sign with their name and their address, with their zip code to their constituents. Mark Warner should have 5,000 emails from women in Virginia with a Virginia zip code that says, sir, you say you support women. This is a tangible thing that you can do. There are financial issues here. You know, when you have a woman making 70%, 77%, and because she's not making a living, a wage that really allows her to support her family, see what we have here, Marcella, which is interesting to me, is we have an overlap of cultures. We have a 1950s mindset and a 2013 reality. We have the mindset that a woman's income is somehow secondary and kind of the recreation and the vacation fund. But the reality is that women in 2013 are supporting families on that income. And if they're not having equal pay, we as a society are picking it up. We're subsidizing the free lunches. We're giving the food stamps to these working poor women, to these women who are making almost 30% less and qualify for services when all they really want is to be paid legitimately the same living wage and to have the same equality. So we're talking about an economic disparity that really affects families on every level and affects what we as citizens pay in terms of services, because somebody's got to pick up that extra 30%. Somebody does. And we're all doing it. It's a paradigm that does not work in 2013. Everybody should be able to go to work and make a living wage that allows them to take care of their family, and the gender should not matter.
Exactly. Not the gender, not the political persuasion or sexual preferences or color or, you know, any of that.
Person. Yeah. I go to work, I get paid. Whether or not I've got breasts or not, it should not apply, unless I'm working in a milk bank.
And for those who don't remember, this goes back to what Eileen is saying. We're all talking about this mindset that a woman didn't need to be paid enough, and the reason she didn't is because she had a man to take care of her. Now, that goes back even beyond the 1950s. We're talking about this is something that has been ingrained, and we simply need to stop pretending we don't know that it's 2013, because it is.
Because Oprah Winfrey.
And in too many areas.
Oprah Winfrey was talking about how when she was in her first job as a news anchor in Baltimore, she found out that the man she worked with was making like literally twice as much money. And she went to the head of the station and said, why am I making 26,000? I think she even quoted 26,000, and the other guy, my co-anchor, is making 58,000. And he looked at her and he goes, well, do you have a wife? Do you have kids? Do you have a kid in school? You're a single girl. You don't need that much money. So he was telling her that, well, you know, there are plenty of women out there that are trying to put a kid through college, that are trying to keep, you know, pay the mortgage with or without her husband, you know, single parent or co-parent. These families, that woman has got the expenses that she's not, it's not just the vacation money to Disney World. This is money to pay the bills.
I need
she
to
doesn't
cut
make
in.
A living wage. you know, somebody's going to have to pick up the slack.
Thank you, Eileen. Thank you, Candy. Thank you. I said Candy Graham, Andrea Miller, Eileen Davis, thank you so very much. We've got to go. Thanks for being with us today, everyone. And be sure to visit the ERA Facebook pages and like all of them. There are several there. And be at those regional offices. We're going to go out now with Hip Hop for President by Bernard Hankin.
No strings attached, no looking back. A new man is what you looking at, giving up everything.
Hey, yo, I got something to say. I need y'all to listen, which is what doesn't happen for most politicians. Yo, I spit thorough rap. Yo, where's my burrow at? I'm fed up with the federal government bureaucrats. Yo, don't need no stethoscope to hear they talking muddled. This is progress. The Frederick Douglass freedom struggle. So they stack their next million. I need some neck healing. I speak truth, raise the roof while they raise a debt ceiling.
Oh.